aboard, you people. Starship, Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Happy Thursday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Going well so far? Everything okay?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I just have to say that as I'm watching all this coverage of the hurricane.
Yeah, Florence.
I do wonder myself, if I were sitting there and I had a house and I had all that stuff, and I had aminals and all that that I needed to protect, if I weren't right on the beach, would I go? I certainly wouldn't go down to the beach and run up and down it and look for Don Lemon and tell him and just brag to him that I'm not leaving. But you know, would I go? I mean, I know we're telling everybody to go. I don't know if I'd go.
Well, why wouldn't you go inland a little bit or try to get out of that
kidding,
zone?
Somewhat
you would,
inland?
You would run.
I would tell
you.
People to run.
You would run first and push people down.
Asking you.
Don Lemon would be like in the water.
Right.
It would be in the sand.
Get out of the way, Don Lemon. Get out of the way.
Grab his boots and boom, you'd be gone.
I like it when you cry, Don Lemon. All right. Ryan Burrow is there. And Ryan, where are you, Ryan?
I am in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
All right.
There you go. That's where Fort Bragg is, by the way.
Yes. And the big question is, since you're there, actually, and you just mentioned Fort Bragg, how is the military getting ready for this?
A couple different ways. Number one, they've already flown a bunch of their helicopters out of the line of, you know, the wind and the rain and everything like that, trying to protect that equipment as best they can. And number two, they've set up, various evacuation able vehicles, these high water vehicles that they may use to go in and pull people out of some of these low-lying areas. They're setting up meals and water as well. So they're ready to respond if needed, and they got all of their equipment out of the way so American dollars don't go to waste due to this storm.
I know it was downgraded to a Category 2, and I was listening to some of the interviews. People somehow found a false sense of security in that downgrade. It's still extremely powerful, a monstrous storm in size, and that storm surge is up to 13 feet in some areas. Very dangerous conditions.
Yeah, and especially inland. I mean, we're going to see, you know, potential for 20 inches of rain in some locations, 30 inches of rain even along the shoreline, maybe up to 40 inches of rain. We're talking, you know, 8 months worth of rain in a span of 24, 36 hours. So, you know, it's nothing that anyone here seems to be relaxing about. Just been driving up and down here. Most of the stores are closed. There's a McDonald's open. A couple of the gas stations are full service right now. A lot of them don't have any gas, but they're keeping their store part open, and then some of them have just completely shut down altogether.
So there was a run, obviously, on gas as people were trying to get out of there.
Gas. The one guy came in desperately looking for ice. He obviously figures that the power's going to go out, and he's going to want to keep, you know, some of his, you know, meats
stuff
and milks
going,
and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I keep my meat cool. What circumstance are you going to move? What's the line for you?
Well, you know, right now, this is kind of where I'm at. We've got Jim Ryan from ABC. He's in Wilmington. We've got Pete Combs in Myrtle Beach right now. So that's kind of where the strike point seems to be of that big red blob that's moving to the coast. This part right here where I'm at is a lot of support staff. I'm looking at a lot of utility trucks that are getting ready to move into whatever area needs to be. And, you know, a lot of support staff that are getting moved into position. So, you know, we'll see kind of how this storm moves and tracks. And, you know, I may not stay here for very long. I may be moved. But the other thing is I may not be able to move. You know, eventually at some point, there's the possibility that some of these roads are going to be flooded out. And, you know, you're going to just need to stay put and see kind of where things lie and where people are able to move to and fro.
Is there a sense of panic, a sense of what are you getting from the people who are still there?
No, not yet. And, you know, part of that is, I mean, this is the first time we've seen cloud cover. It's a little breezy. You might be able to hear it in the microphone, but, I mean, this is nothing that you would notice in a day in Chicago as of yet. I don't think the panic's really set in. I can tell you they've opened up 7 shelters across the county. I went to one of them. There are already quite a few people there. In fact, hundreds of people have already registered and are staying at these shelters. These are mostly people who are in low-lying areas who know, you know, it doesn't take much for their home to flood. So obviously, this is going to be no difference when they get 10 to 15 inches of rain. So they're telling people this is the time to make that decision. You know, if you want to get into a shelter, do it now, because once this rain starts to fall, they may not be able to get to you, or it may take some time. So now's decision time.
Yeah, I bet. I read also that they're kind of, they've started to figure out what people, some people stay back because of their pets, and that they've figured out more opportunities for people to bring their pets with them. There are shelters that accept pets. There are some hotels that relax their rules.
Two of the seven.
But you have to prove that the dogs have rabies shots and stuff like that. I mean, where do you find that paperwork?
Well, they want you to bring the papers. They're not going to turn you away, but they want you to bring the paperwork. You know, the issue, too, is a lot of people with pet allergies. That's the problem we saw in Houston, is people were getting dropped off by the busload at the George R. Brown, and they were getting turned away because they had a pet, because people inside of the convention center didn't, you know, or had allergies, and they just weren't set up for that. So that's something that they think about in advance. We did just get an update from county officials, and they say one of the shelters has taken in a bird, too. So it seems like they're willing to
therapy bird.
A therapy peacock or something like that.
So that's, exactly.
Case-by-case basis, probably.
Yes, I think so.
All right, no goats, no pigs.
Now, I know you talked to somebody a little bit earlier here, and we have the audio.
Soon as I heard it, I was like, okay, it's time to evacuate, get out of here, because it's not worth. I mean, you get one life, you can always replace furniture or whatever, anything material, you know. I've had it before, lost it, you know, material stuff, so you can always get that back, We boarded up. Well, my wife did most of the work. She did most of putting everything inside off the porch, putting boards up and stuff like that. Then we brought our cat with us.
Okay.
So whatever gets destroyed, gets destroyed.
Well, all right.
That was Barry Gary of Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, Barry Gary.
He said that he wanted to ride out the storm in his swimsuit in the hot tub at the Embassy Suites. So that's his plan.
How far in is the Embassy Suites? Is that in Fairfield where you are?
Yeah. He traveled about 90 miles out, and even though the arms of the storm come this deep and we could see up to 15 inches of rain, he felt like this was a safe place. He's actually a caretaker of an 89-year-old woman, brought her and a relative along with them. They're not staying in the same hotel room as he and his wife, but he wanted to make sure that she was going to be okay. And he said, I'm prepared to stay here for weeks if need be. He said he's not going back until he knows the power is on and it's safe to drive back to his place. He said he just bought the place, just bought a bunch of new flat screen TVs, a bunch of new furniture, and just had to board it up and say goodbye. And he said it's just stuff. He's lost stuff before, but it was a little tough to say goodbye to all that.
All right, we'll check in with you a little bit later on, Ryan. Thank you so much. Appreciate you being
there.
All right, Ryan Burrow live for us and for ABC News in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where that massive storm is coming on shore, and it does look like the wind field is not going to be quite as dangerous as they thought on shore. Mm-hmm. But that's not the story of these storms.
No.
The story of the storms, of these kinds of storms that we saw in Texas and we saw in Puerto Rico and we've seen in so many other places, and Katrina, obviously, is the flooding. And the flooding is what kills people. The flooding is what makes places inhabitable and kills people not only immediately, but over a long period of time, too, because people can't get their medicine. They can't get essential services. Electricity doesn't come back on. There's all kinds of things. And then you get, as you saw in Puerto Rico, you get this crazy kind of vermin infestation afterwards, too, that it can take months, in some cases years, to be able to get to get out. It's crazy.
Disease, all kinds of risks when you're in floodwaters like that.
So, all right, let's check in with Judy Pilak. What's coming up in the WGN News at the bottom of the hour?
One more to go.
Violetta?
This week on Chicago's Best, pulled pork sandwiches, turkey tips, and ribs. An all-new episode of Chicago's Best Barbecue, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom right now. He's getting ready for all the Ben Bradley shows that are coming up on the WGN-TV news.
Just one Ben Bradley show today, so it'll be safe to watch.
Okay.
WGN.
Which one is that?
That would be the 4 to 5 p.m. Shaping up to be another busy news day, guys.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what's going on in Jason Van Dyke.
Yeah. So we've got now 12 jurors and 5 alternates, it looks like, have been selected. Now, the judge waiting to swear in that 12th juror until tomorrow, giving the defense one last chance to opt for a bench trial. Because once that 12th regular juror is sworn in, then it's done. Then the trial becomes a jury trial, which, as we know, is very unusual for a Chicago police officer facing a criminal trial in Cook County. Interesting on the jury makeup, 1 African American, 7 whites, 3 Hispanics, 1 Asian American. So not a terribly diverse jury when you consider the diversity of Cook County. Our Julie Unruh, who's covering the
those numbers one more time for
yes, me. So of the main juror, we have 7 whites, 3 Hispanics, 1 Asian American, 1 African American.
Okay.
So our Julie Unruh talked to Laquan McDonald's great uncle today, and he said he's not deterred by the racial makeup of this jury. He said the defense has skillfully done what they set out to do, but Laquan McDonald's great uncle telling our Julie Unruh the facts of the case will bring justice and closure.
One African American, though, it seems, I don't know, I just, you wonder if others would perceive it differently. His great uncle says he feels he still can get a fair trial. I wonder if others would say that doesn't seem particularly representative. The other issue is if the defense does decide for the bench trial, which I understand they can do tomorrow morning, is that
they've
right?
They've got to make that decision before the 12th juror is sworn in, and the judge very intentionally did not swear in that 12th juror today to give the defense the
until
night
tomorrow morning
to
decide.
Yeah.
But you wonder a bench trial, how the public in Chicago will perceive that versus a jury trial. I'm just throwing that out there. You wonder. A bench trial would be in the hands of the judge and the law, and then the jury of your peers would be the jury trial, right? And you just see that, you wonder how each would be perceived. There's always already so much intensity around this, and the protesters outside, and even the jurors have commented that they walk past these protesters and that they can feel the anger and they feel the animosity.
There is a big difference between being judged by a jury of your peers and the public knowing a jury is the one deciding this, as opposed to a Cook County judge. Think back to the case of Rekia Boyd. She was the young woman who was shot and killed by an off-duty Chicago police officer who was upset about noise and crowds gathering near his home. That officer fired into the crowd. He was charged. The case proceeded to a bench trial, and in the middle of it, the judge basically said, hey, the prosecutors applied the wrong charge here, so he threw it out. And that led to a lot of questions, a lot of mistrust, about the way police officers get treated in this system. And that's not to say the judge made the wrong move in this case. It is to say it certainly has a different appearance, a different feel when a jury is deciding as opposed to when a judge is deciding.
I would agree.
Judge Gahan is still going to control this trial. I mean, he's going to be controlling it on behalf of the jury for that. And so a judge could throw out a charge in front of a jury,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
What happened there is not necessarily because of the bench. But In this case, I mean, the question is, everything is so political now in this town. Everything is so motivated by political identity and racial identity that the notion that these individuals, these 12 that are ultimately going to decide this, or, you know, ultimately there's 16 in there, they're going to hear it, right? It's 12 plus 4. Mm-hmm. So what you just said, Ben?
I think we've got 5 alternates.
5, okay,
actually.
So 17 people are going to hear this, and 12 of those 17 are going to make this decision.
Right.
It does seem that we should give them the benefit of the doubt, that they're going to be able to figure that out.
Well, and we talk a lot about, you know, perceived fairness and the racial makeup of a jury pool and how that's viewed by people who have been activists in this case and people who have been demonstrating. Let's also not forget that we've got 10,000-plus Chicago police officers in this town, plus their families, who see it through a different prism, you know, who see the opportunity for a fair trial, the opportunity to be judged perhaps not by your peers, but by the rule of law in the form of a bench trial. You know, they see that differently. So there are certainly, you know, a lot of different vantage points that people come to this trial, and they will all see the testimony, the same testimony, through very different eyes.
Yeah,
right. Because the testimony and the application of the rule of law here, based on how this all happened. This is not a case of citizen on citizen shooting where you would the rules involving the laws, not just the rules, the laws that involve these kinds of circumstances, where it's a sworn peace officer who is able to carry a weapon and has the legal protection to use that weapon
right.
to stop a threat, regardless of the outcome. becomes the essential issue here. And this is not like a Rodney King situation where you see people where he's already down, he's already handcuffed, and people are beating Rodney King. You got multiple police officers beating Rodney King. That was, you know, that is a clear physical abuse. It wasn't a murder trial, right? That was a little bit of an easier one for the jury that missed it anyway, because they were, in that particular case, they missed it. In this particular case, I think a murder charge, a first degree murder charge, is, I'm out on a limb here, but I'm just going to express my opinion here, not as a lawyer. I am expressing that I don't think that that is, based on the circumstances that we know, we've seen on the videotape, and that we know so far. We'll have to see what comes out in trial. But at this point, I cannot imagine why that would be a first-degree murder charge. There are lesser charges, I am sure, that would apply to this, but first-degree murder doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
that's me.
A lot of people say that because you have to have the intent to kill, right?
Right, and you have to, and there's a reason. And to me, it's all about how did those two people intersect on that day? Why were they both there? One was there because he was called to do it, because that's his job.
And then had no idea he was going to be called to that scene.
And this young man had created enough disturbance throughout the previous 2 hours to this that there were a huge response of police officers to his location.
And we also can't confuse that the public outcry after this was certainly about Laquan McDonald's death, but also about, you really can't call it anything but a cover-up,
right?
The intentionally misleading statements issued by the Fraternal Order of Police representative out there that night, by the officers who wrote things in their reports that were contradicted by what was seen on the camera, and the fact that police brass signed off on it. But that all doesn't factor into this trial that's happening at 26 in California.
You just hope that
it does
now
factor into the public mistrust.
That's true.
Those four walls of that courtroom now close down, and that justice, as we express it in the United States of America, which is about as good as it gets around the world, whether we like it or we don't. I mean, it's hard to find a better justice system around the world at this size. It's going to be up to that, those jurors, those 12 that are going to make the decision, the judge and the lawyers, to make sure that justice is served here. So we'll be watching this starting tomorrow.
And it looks like we could get to opening statements Monday.
All right. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Good to be with you.
Judy Pilak's got the WGN News right now, being brought to you by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Oh, that music can mean only one thing.
One of our favorite people.
The circus is coming back on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea. I was just saying this to our producer, Mark McKinnon, who is one of the producers of this amazing television show that is on Showtime. But I don't know. I said to Jeff, I'm like, what possibly could they choose to cram into half an hour here? Because there are 60 different stories that you could tell this week on the circus. So which one did you choose?
Well, it's still early. You know, we still got a couple of days of the week left. We'll probably change the whole show. You know, that's the thing about this show is that, you know, by Thursday or Friday, the stuff we shoot Monday and Tuesday seems ancient. And in this administration, you know, every day is a whole new day of surprising, shocking, dramatic and entertaining news. So we'll see, but we've already shot some really good stuff. I mean, we've got some stuff with Steve Bannon you're going to love at Breitbart Embassy. And I spent a day on the Hill today with, talking Brett Kavanaugh and all kinds of good stuff. I mean, we may try and whip down to Puerto Rico and talk to the mayor down there about President Trump's comments about the Puerto Rican hurricane, which he tweeted this morning, which you may have seen.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff. But like you said, it's just, you know, the show, when we first got this show, they said you're going to do 26 episodes. And my first response was, oh, my gosh, there's going to be weeks where there's just not that much going on. That's never happened.
Never.
I mean, the challenge is always, what are we going to cut? You know, I can already see that. I mean, we're already having conversations right now about what we have to cut this week, stuff we've already shot.
And it's a 30-minute show. I mean, that's the thing. And they got to somehow cram all this stuff into 30 minutes. Let me just ask you about Bannon. You know, Bannon, Christie and Bannon are at each other now because of the Bob Woodward book. I, you know, obviously. obviously you don't want to give away what you've got here, but I find this a very interesting storyline, that one of the stories that is in the Bob Woodward book is about Donald Trump getting mad at Chris Christie for spending campaign money on the presidential transition in December and January of 2016 into 17. And that, you know, yelling at him, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And Christie's like, that's from Bannon. That's Bannon saying that. And you didn't even check the quotes. He's all mad at Woodward. I mean, is Bannon stirring things up?
I literally was reading, I'm reading the book right now, and I was literally reading that chapter 10 minutes ago. That's so funny. Yeah. So ironic that you bring that up.
We're on the same page here. It always happens. The question is, though, do you think, are we going to get the sense from this, if it makes air, that Bannon is still in there stirring it up?
Oh, he's definitely stirring it up. You know, he's got this movie that he's produced, you know, which is what he used to do. And you know, I and my partner John spent about 3 hours with him last night. And I hear it was a wrestling match. So it should be good. I mean, you know, if you know John and you know Bannon, you can imagine ideologically that they come from different places.
Yes, yeah, I think that's true.
It'll be interesting. By the way, we just announced today that Steve Schmidt is joining us for a number of episodes this fall. For your listeners who may know who he is, he's the former John McCain manager, and we had him on a couple episodes last spring, and he's joining us again as a contributor.
Right. Mark, I don't know if this makes the cut because this is so 3 days ago or 4 days ago, but the New York Times op-ed piece, did you see the interview with Ann Coulter saying that she believes that it was written by Jared, claiming that Jared and Ivanka will want to reemerge in New York society after this presidency, and that he wants to be seen as the secret resistance, or at least the mind within who was trying to calm things down and move things into more of a safe area. What do you make of that? I know she's selling books, and so it's hard to take it what it is. But what do you think?
No, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical of that. I mean, that's family, and you know, I mean, that's the first line of defense for the president, it's hard for me to imagine that, because that would. You know, if that ever, well, if the intent was to be outed later, I mean, that's son-in-law. I mean, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine Ivanka would ever presumably be in the loop. So I don't think that doesn't make sense to me at all.
Does it make sense? I mean, the sense that I get of what's happening here is that things are actually falling apart a little bit. People have been saying things are falling apart in the White House for a long time. I never really got the sense that they were totally that ornaments are falling off the tree. But I think that there has been this constant, in the same way that they talk about these hurricanes, it's the sustained winds that really get people in this, is the sustained winds of controversy surrounding the president are taking their toll. There's never a downtime. There's never a moment where they can take a breather and they can take a couple of days off, because he makes news when he shouldn't be making news. He makes news out of things that you know, because he has to take on every slight, every indignity that he perceives, that they're constantly, the folks around him are constantly having to react.
Well, working for a president under normal circumstances is exhausting. And so, yeah, this is just like on steroids times 100 every day. And to your point, I mean, they already have an issue of, you know, a government that's not fully staffed and record high departures. And I think that there's going to be a full scale exodus in November, especially if the Democrats win the House, which is more than likely at this point. And so, you know, you think about, as you said, you know, ornaments have been falling from the tree, but maybe the tree's going to fall over. And that it's just, at a certain point, if you're that exhausted and you don't have adequate staff and you deal with a real crisis, and arguably, you know, this administration hasn't had to deal with a real significant Katrina or, you know, 9/11 or something.
Well, Houston was pretty bad. But then I think because they looked at Puerto Rico, and I will say it out loud. Mm-hmm. I think they looked at Puerto Rico and thought, what's the political fallout if we don't expend the exact kind of energy that we did in Houston. It's easier, and then no question about it, it's easier to get all the resources to South Texas. And certainly easier than it is to get onto an island. But even the humanitarian crisis is much different in Puerto Rico because you got far fewer people impacted by it, and they could have addressed it much better than they did, obviously. And so it just seems that they didn't, the fatigue at a moment like this, when you have fatigue, and now you're going to have two Trump voting states here, North Carolina being super important to the president in 2020, if in fact this goes, and I'm looking at it politically because he's looking at it politically, and they're going to try to figure out how to respond to this, and maybe they don't have the horses to do it.
Well, exactly, you have this situation where this is an opportunity for the president to be very presidential this week. First of all, with Shanksville and 9/11, and then with the storm. I mean, those are two things that presidents are supposed to do. They're big opportunities to heal the nation and protect the nation, and yet he's in a debate now over how many people actually died in Puerto Rico, which is just it's certainly not empathetic.
He took a step forward in Shanksville. I thought Shanksville was while Dave was reading off of a script, he stayed with the script, which is important for him.
I'll give it credit, but as I said to a colleague, it's pretty hard to screw that up. I mean, it's such a solemn moment. Just read the teleprompter and get out of there. But you did. So, hats off to that, because it was the tone was right and the words were right. And he checked that box, and now we get the hurricane. But he's firing off about Jeff Sessions he has Eric Holder over there.
Can I ask you a question as a former political operative yourself, Mark McKinnon? Do you think it was a political choice for him to go to Shanksville as opposed to New York?
No, not really. I mean, I think it really had more to do with the fact that there was a specific new memorial that was being installed at Shanksville. It made sense to go to Shanksville to sort of, salute this new memorial that was being installed. So I think that was really driving it.
All right.
What about the New York primary? I know it's a little bit about New York, but the Cynthia Nixon, former actress against Cuomo, and more of a solid Democrat. A lot of people are looking at that to say, hey, is this going to tell us more about the way the Democratic Party is going to move coming up in terms of how progressive they want to be or sticking to the way they've been in the past? Will you be reading something into the results tonight?
Well, yeah, I think Cuomo's going to win pretty handily. I mean, Cynthia Nixon ran a pretty shoestring deal. But the fact that it was a race at all says something. And I think from the congressional race recently up there, that was the real kind of bellwether. We've got plenty of evidence all over the country that the physics in the Democratic Party are pulling very hard left, which I think has interesting implications for 2020, because I think it's very likely that the Democrats will nominate somebody pretty progressive from the sort of Sanders wing of the party, Warren. And if that's the case, I think it makes things really interesting, because Donald Trump, I'm almost certain, will run under any circumstances, no matter what's happened legally or otherwise, because it's just not in his DNA to go out a loser, because that would be the perception. So he runs, and he probably wins the Republican primary just because he kind of has a stranglehold on those base voters. And then under that scenario, I think that you get a Republican establishment type that goes and runs as an independent and maybe as a dream ticket with a Democratic VP. And under that scenario, I think you get kind of a 30-30 outcome. And then you have a situation where 2020 makes the circus look like a zoo.
All right. There's your tagline for the show.
We'll be there.
The circus.
The renamed circus.
Yeah, the zoo.
You might have to.
The circus premieres for season, 3.5, or I don't even know what we're going to call it now, on Sunday night on Showtime. Do not miss this. I know that Mark McKinnon is no Sacha Baron Cohen, but this is an amazing 30 minutes of television that does as good a job as you can in digesting deeply what happens in the in this news week, because it's all shot within the 7 days between episodes here, and it's an incredible. I just have to say, for those of us who work in your industry, in this industry, it's the amount of manpower and work to get that on the air the way it gets on the air. You know, that is
incredible.
It's an incredible, incredible machine you guys have built there. So,
well, thank you. Part of it is that we drink heavily.
So. Yeah. Well, and I noticed that on the show. Well, you guys have the easy job.
We drink on the show. Yeah
you just sit there. Well, we do too. You're just sitting there drinking, and it just works out like that.
Yeah.
All right. Kick it hard, my friend.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
you
Mark.
Kick it back.
All right. There goes Mark McKinnon right there. Let's check in with Judy Pilak with the WGN News headlines. What's going on at the top of the hour?
We now have a jury in the Jason Van Dyke murder trial.
Violetta, traffic brought to you by TSA PreCheck. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. It's time now to talk to Tom Skilling, who joins us every day, brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And Tom, that was an excellent explanation you just gave a couple seconds ago to Judy about why our weather is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And yet things are so bad on the East Coast. And as you're watching this hurricane come ashore, it looks like the eye wall is just now trending just north of Wilmington,
yes,
North Carolina.
And it's slowing down, as had been predicted. You know, these things are like giant heat machines. There's all kinds of air rising through this storm. That's the hurricane's function in nature. It's to redistribute the disproportionate amount of heat that falls in the tropics. And the rains that occur in that process are prolific, to put it mildly. By the way, we have some late wind gusts. They've just come in. Cape Lookout's just recorded an 85-mile-per-hour gust. They have 71-mile-per-hour gusts already at Cherry Point Marine Corps. And Wilmington's had 48-mile-per-hour gusts, and that's just the warm-up. It should be pointed out, you know, the shortcoming of the Saffir-Simpson characterization scale, or intensity scale, which is, you know, what leads to the Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 3, Cat 4 designation. You know, there have been many in the research community that have claimed for some time, and this storm's a perfect example, that this really doesn't encapsulate the full, thrust of these storms, because all it looks at is one parameter, and that's wind speed. And there's so much more to it. This is a large storm. The hurricane winds go out 90 miles in all directions, nearly 200 miles on tropical storm strength winds. So it's huge. And if you looked at the total energy production of this storm, even though the wind speeds seem to have come down, the top wind speeds, the really important thing is how much energy it's releasing, because this is what rakes across the oceans and produces the storm surge, the life-threatening winds, and also the waves. And by the way, I was just saying, the buoy reports, there are 24 to 29 foot waves already. Wow. I don't know whether you saw it, Ro. Anna, I sent you a link to that a live camera out there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I did see a live camera.
Yeah. I'm going to look right now, because I'm trying to find anything what does Weather Center have up on it?
What's that?
Your website.
We've got it. I put it on my Facebook page, and that goes over to our blog as well. So, and we're going to show it on the air too. But this is a live camera. When I posted it this morning, it's right on the Carolina coast. And when I posted it this morning, you can hear the wind. It is complete with audio.
And yes, I can hear it right now.
I heard you talking about staying on the island, and that's why I sent it to you, because I thought, you know, you weren't sure whether you'd leave.
Yeah. It already looks dangerous, doesn't it?
This flag that they've been showing.
Is in tatters now.
And the flag was, about 2 hours ago, was in...
intact.
Totally intact.
Yeah.
And it's an American flag, and it is an amazing... And even the camera has been jostled here.
And you know what's interesting, Ro? Anybody who's gone through these storms will tell you it's the roar that really starts to get to you, and especially if you start hearing the building you're in falling apart, but believe me, if you saw that, you would not stay on these barrier islands, because that is one mean storm. But
I wasn't talking about being on a barrier island. I would get off a barrier island, but you're wondering about these people who were a couple of miles inland, off the coast, and they're like, well, because that's the people that they're talking to are going down to the beach.
Is it really going to hit me? Is the flooding going to reach this far in?
They want to be by their stuff. You know, I mean, it's a
much
harder decision.
It.
Yeah.
But well, you know, some interesting stats here. 56,000 sandbags have been filled and placed in place in Charleston. They're out of sand. The population of the area that is being threatened by this storm has grown by 1,300%, by 13 times since 1940. So this is, you know, these coastal areas have just exploded in population, and gives you an idea. But that includes the inland areas as well. And still intact are forecasts of local 30 to 40 inch rains with this system, which will be life threatening and producing extraordinary amounts of flooding. And again, those are the sort of parameters that are not taken into account by just looking at peak wind speed. So, you know, Katrina, if you'd looked at Saffir-Simpson and only the category of storm that was going in, you wouldn't have thought a lot of it. And yet the broad expanse of that storm produced the mammoth damage over a huge spread of the coastline down there in the Gulf. And it ended up being the second most expensive hurricane in history. So some have suggested that what we ought to be citing to characterize the strength of these storms is the total energy budget. And there are scales that could do that, and you could educate the public to use those, because that's what reflects the damaging aspects of the storm. 76% of the people that die in hurricanes die of flooding or right. storm surge.
That's the point that that I was
making so clearly yesterday.
Yeah, that, and today, that's the argument one would have.
Yeah.
If they were, you know, standing by and thinking to themselves, all right, well, how bad could the flooding possibly be here? Now,
right.
You saw on CNN, I was just watching this, in between the time that I had said this earlier,
yes.
Like, I don't know what I would do, to then watching this woman who is a reporter at CNN, who, by her own description, is 6 feet tall, and she goes, and the water was down here a minute ago, and now it's up here to her hips,
wow.
Right?
Well, you can already
and you're
see
like,
it getting,
oh, I think I would be leaving at that point.
Some of the North Carolina, South Carolina webcams, or those live cams you're talking about, you
yeah.
can see it's already approaching the houses, and it, you know, it's starting to show some of its ferocity in terms of the wind speeds as well, as you're pointing out.
Anna, and you know, it's interesting, in this day and age of social media, say what you will about it, but we're getting video.
This is it right here.
What's going on. Yeah, just listen to that.
Are there any surfers out there right now, Ro?
Because
there were 2 hours ago when I was watching cable news. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
well, the sustained winds right now are around 100 miles an hour.
That's correct.
At this place. It's sustained.
Cat 2, right.
Yeah.
But again, it's a very large storm, so
yeah,
it's discriminating.
I was reading that Florence is going to pass over 6 nuclear power plants in North Carolina, South Carolina, but that post-Fukushima, after the earthquake that hit there and the horrifying aftermath of that nuclear power plant disaster, that they raised the standards and allowed to account for the flooding that inevitably does occur in these types of natural disasters.
You know what else they cite as a major hazard out there are these hog and poultry farms they have out there, and they have these pools that hold
all the
waste.
But I know where you're going with this.
What?
I just want to warn people, you're going to get sick the minute he explains
it's
what happens
gross.
Here.
It really is. I mean, they have these pools where they, you know, put the carcasses and fluids and all that come out of these animals.
The effluent out of the rear ends of the pigs.
Yes.
Pig
yes.
poop.
Yeah, pig poop and all the rest.
They're saving it for.
They use it for
manure. And, I mean, for fertilizer.
Well, they're trying to dispense it. Dispense with this stuff, and so they put it in these ponds. And the fear is that as these floodwaters come in, this stuff will overflow in some areas. So
yeah. And they go into the water supply, into the river water.
Yeah.
And then the river water is often used as part of water supplies for communities.
Yeah.
And then look out.
Just sounds horrible.
And by the way, that happened in Harvey last year in Houston, too. You know, people wading through that water. There's waste in that. There are chemicals, gasoline, oil, so forth.
Right.
Fire ants.
Flowing. Yeah.
I've gotten
floating
bitten by
colonies
of
fire ants, right?
Mm-hmm. It's not a very pretty picture, to put it mildly.
It's not. There's also a zoo in North Carolina that put some of its animals underground because being so close to, I guess it's Columbia, they're so close to the coastline, or knowing that these kinds of disasters can impact them. They have these enclosures, these special enclosures. So people I know are worried about those wild horses, and there are a lot of reporting about the wild horses of the Carolinas that are also, they believe that they'll be able to protect themselves. So they're not moving them or relocating them in any way. But that the zoo animals, they moved to protect them as well.
This is the 30th hurricane to landfall in North Carolina since 1851. So, you know, these are not... As hard hit as that area has been with storms like Hazel, Gloria, Irene, and Fran, you know, this area has some hurricane experience, but even there, it's not very frequent.
Mm-hmm.
And it will landfall with the lowest... the fifth lowest central pressure of the hurricanes that have come ashore there. Had it maintained Category 3 hurricane status, or Category 4, that would have been the farthest north that a Category 4 hurricane has ever landfalled in the United States. But it's come down to a 2, but it's making up for what it's lost in wind speed and it's just sheer aerial coverage.
The real issue here, though, is the lingering nature of the rain, right?
You're right.
Not moving quickly. These things are filled with billions of gallons of water.
By the way, that's an interesting point, Ro. There's a calculation. It looks like there'll be 9.1 trillion gallons of water that will fall in North Carolina if forecasts of rainfall are right. The average across the whole state, if you were to average it out, will be about 9 inches, but there'll be some areas that get 30 to 40 inches, and it'll amount to about 9.1 trillion gallons of water that, you know, the river systems and every other conveyance of water there will have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So
9.1 trillion gallons of water.
Yeah, that's the calculation.
That's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water. Yeah. There's no way any river's going to take care of that or any sewer system or anything else.
Well, and then, you know, comes the question of when does it move out far? You know, when does it...
This goes through the weekend.
So people can get in. And you know, the rescue people and the other folks that have got to get in there and fix stuff, how does that work out?
Well, you know, what's amazing is you well know, you have Florida experience and coastal experience, Ro, but one of the problems is, you know, trees go down across the roads, power poles and lines go down. So this throws off all of your roads. And so, you know, anybody who wants to get in to perform, you know, the repair work and all the rest has to deal with obstacles like that that linger, not to mention the standing water. So this is the cleanup for this will take weeks, if not months, and maybe even, a year or more. They're still cleaning up in parts of Florida and Texas from the storms that hit there last year.
Nature is resilient. I will let you go on this note, though. People are worried about the wild animals that are in a situation like this. But in the Keys, the key deer, which are these, they're deer, but they're the size of big dogs, essentially.
Yep.
And they're lovely animals. I mean, unless they're eating your house. But they are, they come up to you. You know, they're a little bit of a beggar
as
an animal.
Them.
Yes, they do. But they're adorable, right? And when that hurricane went through last season, through the Keys and really took out those Keys, right? You know, Marathon and those areas, the middle Keys, really big damage there. You know, within hours, the key deer, these Keys that have been totally decimated. There's key deer walking around,
milling around. No big deal.
And yet, you know, they've done some studies on what happens to marine life, and they find these storms kill millions of fish and all the rest. You wonder with all those waves and all. And I'd never really seen that studied before, but there was a study that came out recently that actually quantified how many fish they figured had died in some of these hurricanes. And so there is an effect on wildlife that's not... not positive either.
Right.
But you're right. It's amazing the resiliency of so many species.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Tom, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Rose, see you later. Bye, Anna.
Bye, Tom. Thanks.
You bet. Right.
And as Tom points out, the weather here is fine. It's going to be beautiful. Actually, kind of almost a little warm over the weekend. 88, 89 over the weekend.
Calm and just beautiful.
So there you go. All right, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour? Join WGN Radio's White Sox Rally to kick off the Red Line Series on Friday, September 21st, a week from tomorrow. We're going to be at Cork and Carry. That's at 35th in Princeton. Broadcasting live starting at 6 a.m. all the way till 2:30. We'll all be there at some point during that 6-hour, that's 8-hour span, actually.
I don't know about 6 a.m., though.
No, you got the 6 a.m. shift.
Oh, okay.
You're there. You're there from 6 to 6.05 a.m.
You know what?
And we need you to be there.
I might come early, 5.30.
Good food there. Real good food there. Oh, my God.
Crooked Carry is totally
love
fun.
Love it there.
It's amazing. I love the South Side.
I've been there once or twice after a game this year.
Okay. She's been there once.
I love when she goes, I love the South Side. And when we were trying to explain to her, when there's traffic on the South Side, she's totally confused about what it is and where it is.
But the numbers, they all make sense. But then they throw in a name.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Can you just stick to the numbers?
Let me just tell you that Cork and Carry. First of all, you got that Cork and Carry right next to the ballpark there,
mm-hmm.
35th and Princeton.
Very convenient.
You know, two blocks.
Pre-partying.
North of the ballpark. But you also have, well, it's a parking lot and a park. I don't know how many blocks that actually is, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, whatever it is.
You can see the park.
Yeah, it's right there. I might just tell you something. That Cork and Carry on Western down in Beverly, mm-hmm. now that is a rocking establishment. Rocking establishment. Don't wear your Cubs gear. I learned that the hard way.
Did you try that?
I learned that the hard way. It is, but that is a ton of fun too. It's a great. Those are great Chicago institutions.
They are.
You know,
awesome places.
Yeah, you go to other places around the country, and they, you know, you want something like that, you got to go to a TGI Fridays or Buffalo Wild Wings or something. All fine institutions. Don't get me wrong.
It's TGI.
Whatever. But the reality is that when you go to a place like that, you see how the real people live.
It's more the mom and pop, the local establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Feels good.
Anyway. We're going to be at Cork and Carry. The entire radio station is going to be at Cork and Carry, essentially. Next Friday, between 6 a.m. and 2:30, as we get ready for the Red Line series. And, you know, we've got the DNA of all of this Chicago baseball in our blood.
We do.
Right? It's Chicago baseball. And this is the end of the regular season in Chicago baseball. And then the Cubs are likely, although sometimes it doesn't quite feel like that, likely to go on into the postseason.
They're going to get in.
They're going to get in. It just worries me.
I don't know about winning the division now. Things are getting tight there.
How about that? How'd that happen? Wow. How? He asked in a panicked kind of way.
The Cubs playing 30 games in 30 days.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But a lot of these, I mean, you know, that the Milwaukee Brewers have played 28 and 30. I know. That's two extra. I get it. I don't understand. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm a baseball prognosticator here. Coming up, we're going to tell you, listen to this, a pretty amazing story. Chicagoan who turned into being one of the big filmmakers in Hollywood, has got a documentary coming out called Chaos America. Wait to hear about this. We're going to talk to him. Richard Roper is going to be here to discuss as well. But first, Judy Pilak stands by with the WGN News in 2.
The idea that you can actually be president of the United States with no government experience, no experience in the military, for the first time in history. He's a 70-year-old man who's never done anything. And they compare him to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had been governor of the largest state in the country for 8 years. There's no comparison.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, we have got Richard Roper in the studio with us.
Hello.
And this is really interesting. You, just right now, you have published a review of this movie, American Chaos. It's a documentary that is coming out. And there's two documentaries simultaneously about the Trump revolution in America.
Mm.
You know, one is Michael Moore, right? That everybody's Fahrenheit 11/9.
Yeah,
right?
That'll be coming in Chicago next week.
And this one, American Chaos, which is being done by a Chicago born and raised director and producer and Hollywood bigwig, Jim Stern, is premiering this week, right? Where are people going to be able to see it?
Yeah, this is available, will be available this starting tomorrow. And you mentioned Michael Moore, and I'll say this about American Chaos. Just to give people a brief description, we're going to talk to the filmmaker himself. But here's somebody who early on saw something happening with the 2016 election, lifelong Democrat, and said, I got to get out there and talk to these Trump supporters. And really, like a listening tour and really getting to know them and hearing from them. And I haven't seen the Michael Moore film yet, so I will reserve judgment to next week. But I can say in this case, there's none of that grandstanding or gotcha stuff or trying to make people look foolish. It's a real legitimate attempt to talk to people who were supporting Trump as we came out of the primaries and mm-hmm. going into the election. And also, you watch the realization coming, sinking in, like, this could go the Trump way. This really could happen.
Well, I think, and Jim Stern's joining us right now. Jim, I think one of the things that we saw from outsiders or people who are, you know, outside the campaign, I should say, but people who, you know, watch politics, you're watching this and you're like, oh, I get it. You know, this is kind of that talk radio Republicanism, and it's easy, simple solutions and punch your dumb nose down your stupid throat kind of approach to these things that, you know, big pugilistic talk shows, whether national or local, have been doing for years and years and years. And he's appealing to that base, but that's about 5% of the nation. So how far could it possibly go? But then we started to see this snowball and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's when you decided to go out there with your cameras and try to figure this out. And there are no easy solutions here, I don't think, to you know, what the one answer is. History will have to determine that for us. But what did you initially think you were going to find, and then what did you end up finding?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. And I think that what I thought when things were happening in May of 2016 is that we were in an echo chamber. Whether I was in Chicago at home, or I was in Los Angeles, or I was in New York, I was hearing from all the people around me, great that Trump has got this nomination. It's crazy, but it's great for us because there's no way he can win. And what I was looking at was a specifically passionate, very focused, portion of the electorate, which was, I thought, had a real chance of carrying him much further than anybody else. So the question is why, and what were they seeing in him that we weren't seeing? And part of what's happening in America today is that people tune into the media that they want to tune into, whether it's Fox News on one side, it's MSNBC on another side. You know, there's very little that's in between, and so people tend to form their own facts, let alone their own opinions, based on information they're hearing, which is not information that other people are hearing. So therefore, the only way to sort of bridge that was to try and talk to them and not make up, you know, their minds for them, but actually try and listen, which is what the movie's about.
There's so many economic reasons that I hear people saying that the president has their full support, whether it's the unemployment rate or the 4.2% growth that was just announced, and some of the things he promised are actually, you know, coming true on along those lines. But then you see Trump, the personality that I feel that so many others find a hard time attaching themselves to, and I wonder if the hardest core of the hardcore Trump supporters you spoke with said, well, we just discount that when he you know, disses McCain's military service or slams people for just because they've, you know, dared say something negative about him. If they just sort of excuse that, or what their feelings were about that, if the larger picture deserves sort of ignoring that kind of thing.
You know, that's a really interesting question. My view is that people have their core and issues, and those issues dominate everything. I interviewed some religious people, two pastors, and their view was, you know, God can support good kings or bad kings. So they dismissed all of the issues which you would think they would not dismiss, because what their real core issue was, what was going to happen to the Supreme Court. So I think that if people's issues are he can help return coal to being a dominant part of our economy, they dismiss the rest. If people think that, in fact, he can help them not have people, you know, crossing the borders onto their property, they dismiss the rest of the issues. So what I did see was, you know, there was a certain amount of hypocrisy in all that. You know, you can talk about family values, which the Republicans have talked about for years, but what they're really talking about is what is important to me and what is my core seminal issue, and if this guy is for it, then I'm gonna forget about the rest of it.
Right. Well, he plays to fear. I mean, that's the most. I think that's the. Obviously, that's the title of the Woodward book. But he figured out a way, like a lot of media has done over the years in this, you know, million channel universe in which we live now. People who have been successful in aggregating audiences have done it by great art. Others have done it by inspiring fear and inspiring they're all out to get you, and you got to listen to me and I will save you. A solution to a problem. Sometimes it's a problem that never existed in the first place, but they create the problem for you, and they create the solution, and then you come into it. And it's kind of a, I mean, it's brand marketing. This all started on Wall Street in 1946, essentially, right?
Maybe before that.
But I mean, really in earnest after World War II was this, you know, was this movement of doing that. And I mean, who knew you had bad breath? Now you do. Now there's a solution to it. So this is a very, you know, he went back to a simple mechanic, I think, that really he always had used in his dealings. He's never wrong. He's always right. It's always bright. It's always optimistic. It is. It's, and when it's not optimistic, it's pugilistic. It's, you're the bad guy, and I'm gonna, you know, stick with me. Stand behind me, people. I'm gonna take care of this guy for you. And it's so simple, and it did work. And I think, Jim, you're 100% right in the sense that each constituency, because he does so many things, so much of the day, he's sending out so many different messages, and people go, well, they're dog whistles. Well, what they really are, though they may be that as well, what they really are direct messages to these constituencies that he knows that if he aggregates enough of them, whether it's, as you just pointed out, beautifully articulated, the border, the coal, the other kinds of, you know, military families that are worried about how they're going to be able to pay for their stuff. And then the social conservatives that really would like to see Roe versus Wade overturned or whatever, you know, or the, you know, there's too many advocacy judges out there, which means left, you know, which means Democrats and people, you know, coming from the left. So we need advocacy on the right. I mean, it's genius on some level.
It is genius, and I think that it's, you know, it's, look, I think you're exactly right. I mean, in America today, you know, I may go out there now and be loyal to Nike because Colin Kaepernick is their spokesperson, but it works on the other side as well. So, you know, branding and brand loyalty is something that that Trump understood. He understood that if you say the same thing over and over and over again, and you say it louder and louder and louder, and you never retrench, you never back off, that's going to land. And that's exactly what he's done. I think what's going to be really interesting is, A, what happens to the midterms, and B, once the Republicans have gotten the Supreme Court the way they want to, once Republicans have gotten the tax bills that they wanted to, once that they've gotten deregulation that they want to, do the Republicans still line up, you know, as strongly behind him, not his core, but his, but the ones on the fringe, as they have in the past, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would guess that's okay. And you know, for people who are not familiar with you, you're a bit of a powerhouse, Jim. The reality is, and you're a kid who grew up on the North Shore, right? And
yes.
And you, lifelong Chicagoan, because you keep coming back here. You keep stuff here. Your family is involved with the Bulls. Did I read that right?
Yes, absolutely. It is what I. You know, I'm Jewish, but my other religion is the Bulls.
So it's black and red. So you wouldn't Sandy Koufax it in case it happened. If there were a Bulls game on a, you know, an important holiday, you'd still be going. I guess that's how that works.
Exactly.
And if you've seen the Michael Jordan IMAX film, Jim was behind that. That was his thing. That, you know, there was a, and it's a great story about that, which I was familiar with years ago. But now it's fascinating to see this. There was a story about you in this particular film, which is a little off your, you know, your brand of doing these other kinds of things. And it's fascinating because people were talking about, you know, wanting to use the IMAX technology for something, and you're like the guy who raised your hand and go, "What about Michael Jordan?
How about that?
Have you ever seen him move?
Who's bigger than life? Right?
Yeah, three stories tall.
What superhero do we have on Earth that we could, you know, that would really suit the IMAX format? Brilliant, yes. Jim. Brilliant. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I've been very blessed. I've been able to do a lot of different things, and from documentary to Broadway to features, and I've been very lucky.
You also did Stomp too, right? Is that, did I read that right?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now I just want to think about this and talk about Stomp. Talk about, I don't know if you're a Renaissance man or just ADD. I don't know which it is, but here's a guy who put on Broadway people jumping up and down and hitting trash can lids when trash cans used to have lids.
And somehow it was beautiful.
And he made And he made it work. I mean, I can imagine the pitch meeting on that not going well. Mm-hmm. All right, here's what we're going to do.
No, really.
Bring in those three guys with the blue faces. Maybe they got an idea.
You know, back in the old days, you know, everybody who was a Renaissance person had ADD.
Yeah, that's true. I think they still do.
That's true.
That is for sure.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you for representing the city well, and good luck with this film. And it's going to be in Chicago. Do you know where people are going to be seeing it?
Yes, it'll be at the River East starting tomorrow.
Yeah, AMC River East, and in about 2 dozen markets across the country as well.
Right. Exactly. That's right. And then it will expand wider after that. But I hope people see it. I think it's a significant message, and. For me personally, nothing is more important than the city of Chicago, and it's wherever I am, it's where my heart is.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. American Chaos is the movie. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right. So let us – oh, man. I don't know how a guy goes from Stomp to making a Michael Jordan movie to making this.
Do they kill singing cats with the garbage can lids? Is it a crossover?
No, it's just the Stomping.
But you have reviewed this film.
American Chaos. My review is online on the Sun-Times website as we speak.
Yes.
It's a good film.
All right. Let's check in now with Judy, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. And don't forget, WGN Radio, a week from today, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Not today. A week from tomorrow, the 21st of September, is going to be a Cork and Carry. That's at 32nd. That's at 35th before. 32nd and Princeton. Well, Princeton and 33rd, I guess. I'm trying to remember now where
walking
it is.
Distance to the park.
3259 South Princeton.
So right. There you
go. Just north of the park.
Just north, yeah. North of the,
on
north
your
of
way.
The park.
On your way
just
there.
Over by there. Over by there.
It's right there. So I'd like to apologize to Cork and Carry for misstating their location. Starts at 6 a.m., goes till 2:30. Coming out and see the entire WGN 7. I think Richard's going to be out
there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Stopping by there. He is patient zero for Sox fans.
Exactly.
And it's a lot of fun. And Cork and Carry is amazing. And I think the Goose Island's going to be flowing pretty heavy there that night. That morning. It'll seem like night, even though we're starting at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I was telling some young poker players the other day, big baseball fans, and about Wilbur Wood, who once threw both games of a doubleheader for the White Sox. And they're like, what do you mean? I go, he started both games. He was 24-20 one year. Basically, he was 24 wins and 20 losses in a single season.
Chase Anderson of the Brewers got pulled after like 50 pitches.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Wilbur Wood was like your uncle at a softball game, you know. All right, who's up for another game? Wilbur's pitching again.
Now, it is true that Wilbur Wood threw knuckleballs.
Knuckleball.
Which is like, it's like playing catch.
So it's not as grueling on your body.
No, he wasn't throwing 100 mile an hour fastball.
He was not.
Or torquing his elbow.
He couldn't get 24 wins and 20 losses. That's like a whole starting rotation. You know, he just was always in the game.
He had an unspeakable injury, though.
Oh, was it the same thing that we saw with Baez?
No. No, you mean...
Abreu.
No, he did not have a testicular torsion.
Oh God!
No.
It was almost just
as bad. Because he threw the ball, you know, fairly softly, and it would just do these things. It would be moved by the wind and stuff. And it was knuckleball. They don't throw it anymore because I guess the batters have gotten too good for it. But it's a wild pitch because it there's no spin on it.
Yeah.
So it just does all kinds of things in the air, and a guy just got a hold of one right back at the mound and hit Wilbur Wood in his knee.
Yeah.
And his kneecap exploded right there. It was just it was unspeakable.
Oh.
One of the first. The Sox have had a couple unspeakables.
Yeah.
And that was one of them.
So Dick Allen always said, you know, hit the ball as hard as anybody ever, that he actually tried not to hit the ball up the middle because he really thought he was going to kill somebody one day.
Yeah.
He had that giant bat and that huge swing, and he tried not to hit the ball up the middle.
All right, let us... anyway...
Go Sox!
So there's a happy story.
Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, is Kev going to be out there?
Kev's going to be there.
My little Sox buddy?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. Good.
They got a good chicken sandwich there.
At the Cork and Carry?
Oh, yeah, buffalo chicken.
Oh, yeah, great food.
Whoa, they do have great
the
food.
Buffalo chicken. Yeah, they really do.
Yeah, it's a Chicago bar. It's a real deal right there.
Yeah, to do everything right.
Yeah. The one there, the one out, down in Beverly. Yeah. All right, let's see. Can we do this? Can we start this?
Yep. It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
Governor of Puerto Rico, Rico Ricardo Rossello, although I think Luis Gutierrez is going to be the next governor of Puerto Rico, but it's just the way I'm looking
at it. Teeing up something.
Who had gotten along pretty well with Donald Trump. That relationship has gone south now.
Oh, no.
That the president tweeted that the 3,000 deaths that have been reported in Puerto Rico, that's a new number that when he left the island right after Hurricane Maria went through, there were anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths, and I don't know where they came up with the 3,000 number, and the whole thing has been made up by the Democrats. So here is the governor responding to that.
Neither the people of Puerto Rico nor the victims deserve their pain to be questioned. You know, we went through a rigorous scientific process. We externalized the investigation so that it was an independent investigation. So we are confident in that estimate. You know, we need to clarify that it's always, at least at this juncture, going to be an estimate, but we're confident that it is very much so around that number.
Now, this was a George Washington University study that they did. They sent their teams in to figure this out. It's a university doing it. It was not the territorial government of Puerto Rico. It was not it was not done by a political organization. It wasn't done by a K Street lobbyist. This is done by a university. And the point of this is, of these 2,975 deaths that they think are attributed to Maria, that some of them were as a result of the flooding, which is what we're concerned about now in the Carolinas. Some of them were within the first days of the hurricane coming through. But the long-term effect, and the president saying, well, you know, I got people, you know, dying of old age, and they account for them there. That is not what they are doing, according to what we have read from this report. It is not that people who were not well are being counted here unless they lost access to their medicine or to electricity or things that would have kept them alive.
Right. In a lot of cases, it was infrastructure and healthcare deficiencies that resulted from the storm that then later contributed to their death. So if you're on kidney dialysis and your hospital lost electricity and you weren't able to and you died, they included you in some cases.
If the hurricane didn't happen, they wouldn't have died. That's basically what the prerequisite would be.
But correct. It is different than the different way they've handled deaths from hurricanes like in Katrina. It's a slightly different way of doing it, which I think that is the piece of this. It doesn't mean that they didn't die as a result of hurricane-related issues, but typically the death toll is you know, due to the storm surge, due to the flooding, due to drowning and that kind of thing, and these were including infrastructure failures.
Okay. Which I think is a fair way of looking at the impact, the true impact of hurricanes. This is a better way of looking at it. So there will be
moving forward
better preparedness for hurricanes, better reactivity to when hurricanes hit. And we went through this with Katrina. There was the response was initially slowed. It was misunderstood. It was misdirected in some cases.
That's right.
And then they eventually got around to doing what they needed to do. And so these are dynamic situations. And if I could just take politics out of it for a second, this would be a good moment for the United States government, regardless of who's running it, to look at the hurricane response, especially if you're going to deal with an island, right? And Puerto Rico is the United States. You know, that's until such time as Puerto Rico leaves the United States or the United States kicks Puerto Rico out of the United States, it is the United States. There's no two ways around it. So we have responsibility to the territory, as we do in Guam. So this is not as we do to embassy and military installations throughout the world that are not necessarily on our soil. So this is a significant significant thing. And when you look at this, and you can say, well, you know, the president can make an argument to his, especially to his, you know, most fervent supporters, look, the Democrats are making this up to make me look bad. And I'm sure there are people that would immediately agree with him on that. But the reality is, if you take that out, what are we going to do to make sure that this doesn't happen again? And why have a response like, look at this, they're making this up to make me look bad, as opposed to, and I did an A-plus on this, this is the best anybody has ever done in a situation like this. The response could be, hey, this is an important moment to recalibrate how we look at these storms, especially now that we have this one coming ashore.
Yes.
And there are four more out in the Atlantic.
Well, you've got
barreling toward us,
imminent destruction, and hopefully not death. But you look at the size of that storm, and there's a lot of focus that needs to be had on that, exactly what's facing us right now.
All right,
number four.
It's awkward over at CBS. There's just no two ways to put it, and it's really awkward on that CBS morning show, right? Because now every hour they have to talk about somebody else that hired them, that they were really happy and went out to drinks with after they got hired and really happy, and now that person has lost their job. And it started with Les Moonves.
Yeah, Julie Chen has actually moved into the Big Brother house. It's like the first time they ever added someone like that. It's like, wait a minute, you know, they need a place, you guys.
I mean, if we didn't understand that Les Moonves had, you know, there was something wacky going on with him, I never understood at CBS how the rest of the employees were like, how come Julie Chen gets all these jobs?
And the winner of the new gig on
issue,
the talk though, is my wife.
She has her own talk show, her own reality show.
Right.
Right? She was a regular on CBS News specials. How does that happen? Oh, married to the
She's
boss.
Married to him.
She's very talented.
Well, now, after they lost Moonves, now they lost another guy.
Oh.
Jeff Fager. Jeff Fager was the head of CBS News. And they say, CBS says, that they fired Jeff Fager because he sent a nasty text to one of their reporters who was investigating him.
Oh,
CBS
geez.
Was investigating itself. She was covering the story about the story of CBS News and this turmoil at the top.
Oh, wow.
And he sent her a text that said, hey, be careful.
Oh.
And then she went to HR.
Good for her.
And HR was like, I don't think this is right. This is
yeah.
What was it like when you received that text on Sunday?
I was shocked. And like the many people that I've covered, you finally understand that conflicting feeling about why and what and why would you even put me in this position now. Mm-hmm. I spoke to someone here that I've
been
working.
Did you view it as a threat?
I did.
Yes.
And it's even hard to say that today because, yes, we do receive harsh language all the time. But this is someone who held an enormous amount of power here, who I respected, and I was shocked.
He texted her, be careful, there are people who have lost their jobs trying to harm me. Hard to look at that as anything other than a threat.
I can think of one who lost her job.
Wow.
Send the text.
Wow. Here it is. There's already enough evidence to warrant a reporter covering it. There's already enough evidence for an internal investigation, and yet he still takes that tack in writing. He uses that. It tells what makes you wonder what his history is.
Well, he'd been there a long time, and
highly respected.
Yeah.
There's no question in terms of his work.
Jeff was on this show actually a couple years ago when Morley Safer died, and I think
there have only been two guys running 60 Minutes, right, in the history of 60 Minutes: Don Hewitt
and Jeff Fager,
and then Jeff Fager.
Yeah. All right. Wow. By the way, we'll get to your 3, 2, and 1, but let me just this breaking news. Well, I don't know. Does Judy want to do the breaking news? Because I'm going to, does she have it? Does, all right, we don't know if she has it, but Paul Manafort has just pleaded guilty, just took a plea deal, so he is going to avoid the second trial going on in Washington, D.C.
And can I add another story to that? Sorry.
Yes,
I didn't know which
do.
One you were. Oh, I have so many breaking stories today. But we're just hearing that a Chicago police officer has been shot in the arm and the leg.
Ooh.
And actually, and I say Chicago, it could be an Illinois state police officer, but probably Chicago, being transported to Mount Sinai with a very large escort.
All right. We'll keep an eye on all of those stories. But right now, Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spot.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Top 5-5 continues. We've worked our way up to
number 3.
When Devon Windsor is apologizing for comments that she made suggesting that she can relate to the struggles of women of color because of her hair. She is one of the models appearing on the new E-Series Model Squad.
Ooh.
That's what we say in Chicago.
Model Squad.
Thank you, Squad.
Is your mom watching Model Squad?
And she got a dressing down from a Shanina Sheikh, whose father has roots in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, recounting to her fellow models how people used to tell her she would never do high fashion because of her skin color. And then things just got a lot of control from right there.
What's going on? What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Diversity.
Diversity?
What?
Diversity.
Diversity.
I used to get bullied.
I literally went through hell and literally lived in different countries like every other month and didn't speak that language, didn't speak Paris, didn't speak Italian. And I did that for like 2 years.
I don't think you can relate to the turmoils of being different.
Do you know how hard it is to be blonde?
I have to get a highlight every month.
You know how expensive that
is? Oh my God, it's more violin.
So she's equating being blonde and having to get highlights with the other people's struggles. I think she was sort of kidding there. Was she or not? I mean, I didn't see the video. Mm. It looked just an ignorant thing to
say. I wonder if she can speak Barcelona. She said she couldn't speak Paris.
Yeah. What we learned from Model Squad...
Don't watch it.
...is that models might not always have worked as hard in school as they maybe should have because they were pretty. I think that's what we've learned.
Oh,
isn't, don't we
really?
Have? Isn't one of the Jenners on this Model Squad?
I don't know about that.
Isn't that the show Uma Thurman was on in Pulp Fiction, the pilot that she did? Model Squad. Four spots, five.
Checking in at
number 2.
Take 3 for Norm MacDonald. He went on The View today to try to explain what he said on the Howard Stern show based on what he had said before that.
Uh-oh.
What were you trying to say?
Yeah.
Well, I was, print reporters, they ask you questions and then put them all together. What I was talking about was Chris Hardwick, this particular comedian.
Right.
That was a friend of mine. And, if 500 women go against a man, obviously the guy's guilty. But then Chris Hardwick won. It was one woman against one man.
Right.
You know? So I was saying that I thought it was good that the pendulum was slowing and Chris Hardwick has been as rehabilitated as he's going to get.
Okay.
Is that what he said?
But then when he was on Stern, he talked about, how...
He talked about Down syndrome.
Yes, so they asked about that.
It used to be a word we would all say to mean stupid that we don't say anymore,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know the word I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes. And stupidly, I was about to say that word,
and I
stopped and said, "What's the right word to say?" And then I said, a different word that was equally.
Yeah.
Did you realize at that moment that probably...
I realized at that moment that I'd done something unforgivable.
Norm MacDonald used to do Weekend Update. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he used to...
And then he got fired because he wouldn't let it lay off of OJ, and the guy running the network was OJ's friend. Now every 20, 30 years or so, Norm gets...
Yeah.
It started off with him saying that he's friends with Roseanne, and he's friends with Louis C.K., and he put the two of them together because they're two of the only people in the world who've gone through what they've gone through. And it sounded like he was being insensitive to the victims. That's how this all started.
Okay.
I'm trying to promote his Netflix show and things are...
Went south from there.
Yeah.
He's apparently not... I don't know if he's stoned, but he certainly sounds like he is. And if he's not, he should be. And then let's just blame that. Let's move on from there. Okay.
Number 1.
One of the top 25 songs, American-made songs of all times, and one of the top 10 albums of all times, right? Ooh. When Doves Cry from Prince's Purple Rain. That didn't need to be remade, did it? That didn't need to be covered. Does that need to be covered? It's a hard song to cover.
Who would
Bieber?
Cover it?
Bieber? No?
Well, Metallica was not part of the not part of the message there. Metallica probably should have thought this out.
Animals try curious poses. They feel the heat between me and I can just really stand me. I know it could have been so cold. Maybe I'm just too demanding.
Online they say this is what it sounds like when doves die.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness.
Maybe you're just like my mother. She never said it.
I like Metallica.
I agree, but yeah. Look at your Beavis turning to Butthead, you know.
Yeah.
You leave that one alone.
Know your genre. I think there's an important one there.
That sucked. That really sucked.
The top five at five.
Judy's news being brought to you by Grandview Homes. With Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, we got watching a bunch of stories here in the newsroom. So we're at any minute, some of these things could break in. Manafort apparently is close to a deal or has already struck a deal, depending on the reporting that we're listening to here.
That's
We've got two different sources telling us two different things.
That's for the second trial, including the money laundering charges.
Right. Now, it's unclear if he strikes a deal, if he's going to cooperate.
Right.
He was unwilling to cooperate before. The government may strike a deal here, too, because they don't necessarily want to go to trial and have the risk that they would lose the trial. And so, therefore, they did have hung jury on, there was one holdout juror with Manafort on a number of the charges. So they may not want to risk that, and they want to get the conviction and just be done with it. But this does change Paul Manafort's structure in terms of sentencing, because now he's going to be convicted in two separate trials on more than a dozen counts. Mm. And so this is going to be, or close to two dozen counts, so this is going to be a significant amount of time, one would imagine, unless he wants to cut a deal for testimony that would change the sentencing rules. And that does not appear to be part of the story here. So
not yet.
We'll be watching as this develops. We also have the story that is developing in Chicago, breaking in Chicago, of a Cicero police officer shot in an exchange of gunfire with a suspect around Cicero and I-55. Cicero and the Stevenson, in which we're now being told, not only, as Judy just reported, the police officer shot in serious condition being rushed to Mount Sinai, but the other individual involved also shot in this case, too. So we're awaiting details on that. Originally, I was concerned, there was a lot of concern as to how many people were injured in this, and it appears just to be two at this moment. So we have that. And then this bizarre story in Boston.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Where the FBI is now investigating a series of houses exploded in Boston in the last couple of hours. And they believe that they're related to a gas leak of some sort.
At least 50 homes, they're saying.
50, 50.
Explode. And people are evacuating two suburbs. And it's fire, and they've got smoke, if you see any of the visuals, everywhere.
Now they're saying 60 to 100 homes on fire, possibly.
Jeez.
Yeah, the police at the command center.
Do we know the suburb here in Boston?
For Lawrence, people who may have relevant? Andover and North Andover.
They're calling it the Merrimack Valley. If people know where that is, just outside Boston.
Multiple basement fires in Andover related to gas issues with the natural gas system. And they have active fires right now, 25 to 30 of them.
That's a very, that's a fancy part of Massachusetts right there. That'd be like the North Shore. That's interesting. So, how how could that happen?
Right, how could it happen? They said that some residents received some kind of a robocall Thursday asking them to shut off the gas in their homes. I don't know if that was as it was happening, after a few blew up. I don't know. But
yeah, no, it was after several had blown fires up. Had started. They said, turn the gas off. And, you know, they're saying, don't open your windows, don't use your cell phone, don't even try to make a spark.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wow. The situation is really dire there. And they've already evacuated over 30,000 people.
Mm.
30,000 people?
Yeah.
They've evacuated two towns then, essentially. Jeez. Or three. How is that even remotely possible?
Well,
that
quite
this can
frankly,
happen?
If you're in a neighborhood where a house has exploded or even anywhere near, I would leave my home. That's what I think is probably happening. People are
No. I get that part. But how could you have this daisy chain of explosions?
In three different communities.
In three different communities.
Yeah, that's the question.
And I think these communities are adjacent. But still, you have this, and that you have, I mean, if that, just because you have a fire in one house or an explosion in one house doesn't mean that the gas in the other house is going to go. What could possibly, I mean, was this like an increased pressure situation? Is the gas going through the lines?
Cause not immediately clear, but the AP is reporting the Columbia Gas Company announced earlier today it would be upgrading gas lines in these neighborhoods, in neighborhoods across the state, including the neighborhoods.
Bad upgrade.
Where the explosions happen. Unclear if there's a relation to that, but that's what the AP is reporting.
Because you could see one or two or three houses if there was some sort, and we don't know, but if there was some sort of human error, if something, you know, something was struck or something, but for to have that kind of a chain reaction is unprecedented as far as I could, can't recall anything like this anywhere.
Well, there was in the 1990s, there was a whole city block that blew up in just north and west of the Loop. And that was related to a pressure situation, and somebody had left. You know, there was construction in the area. Mm-hmm. They were building these townhomes, and there were a bunch of these other houses down the street from it, and the whole block went.
I don't remember that either.
It was sort of where the old Como Inn was, in area right there, like on Milwaukee Avenue, and just north of the Ohio Street, and where that, you know, just right off the Kennedy Expressway, and. I don't recall it spreading, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, you know, kind of a terminal block right there. But I don't know how it is even remotely possible that you could have that many homes. And I'm seeing pictures of this now, and there's homes on fire all over. And it's not like every home. Mm-mm. It's you go a couple homes and one's on fire, then a couple homes more. I mean, so it could be a pressure situation and maybe, you know, older equipment or water heaters. At this point, what's interesting about this, though, Judy, is there is not an injury or death toll on this, right?
Early on, I had heard two people dead, but I have not seen anything. Then that was not confirmed. And I have not, you're right, have seen anything about people being killed at all.
So these houses might have gone up without people at home.
Yeah.
Which is,
and one person, I think, was in a car that had started on fire. You know, it's such an active situation still that we're not getting a lot of information. It's because it's such a massive response, of course, that it's hard to get information. But I haven't heard of anyone else.
All right. And this couldn't be foul play.
Well, it certainly could be foul play, but that's being discussed. But again, nothing confirmed.
Right.
Saw, you know, a tweet that the FBI was helping out. So
doesn't look likely to be, but it could be. Right. There's a lot of different ways you got to look at these kinds of things. Anything that's out of the ordinary.
It's because of what you said, though, because it's so many different spots.
Yeah. Right.
It's so odd. Yes. Mm. But I don't know enough about gas pipes to know how they run, but it does seem very random.
But massive explosions. If you see the thick clouds of smoke and flames shooting out of some of these substantial
areas,
buildings.
You can't even see the sky. It's so black.
Mm. We've got to think about the gas company here. Has got to say something because they would know. And they undoubtely are responding to it now.
At the very least, if the problem is still ongoing or if they've contained it or found the source of it or if they're afraid for more to happen. I mean, they got to say something.
Clearly out of our listening area. It's outside of Boston. But it still is a pretty crazy situation because how do we know how this can happen? because everybody's got the same sort of situation, and you know, throughout North America, you got gas lines coming underneath your house. You got gas forced air, or gas, you know, gas force heat, those kinds of things, which people aren't really thinking about at the moment.
So Lawrence General Hospital saying it has five victims of the gas fires and explosions. It has activated its emergency protocol. And Massachusetts State Police, you know, as far as that evacuation, they are closing off ramps on interstates to allow the evacuation. So, like I said, still very ongoing, still very active.
It just seems so random. I cannot imagine how this happened. So we'll continue to
watch.
And
by the way, there's a hurricane coming.
How come the hurricane is now our fourth story down?
Jeez.
I mean, think about that.
How did that happen?
I mean, it's
moving a lot slower.
I'm going to move Manafort below the hurricane because I really,
what's the ranking right now?
Right now, I'm going to go with, well, obviously, in the Chicago area, the top story is a Cicero police officer shot multiple times in an exchange of gunfire with an individual on the street there on Cicero, right on the Chicago border, Cicero and I-55, and he's been rushed to the hospital in serious condition, as well as the other person involved in this, the civilian involved in this. So we'll see what happens there. And then I got to go with up to 100 houses exploding in neighborhoods throughout these suburbs just north and west of Boston, and no one can seem to explain it, and they were seeing pictures of it, and it's unbelievable.
It is.
It looks like a plane crash.
Yeah.
In each of these homes.
It's crazy.
Columbia Gas Company is shutting off the gas lines, but it's saying it will take some time to shut off all service. Telling anybody in the area, if you smell gas, don't go near your house. Get out of there. They're just evacuating.
And don't use your cell phones.
Yeah, which is your natural instinct, right? To let people know you're okay or call, but they're like, don't. Jeez.
And don't drag your heels. What else can cause a spark? Vaping, Violetta, don't do that. I don't know. It's weird.
You probably don't want to
it
smoke.
It is a strange situation.
No, probably smoking. not a good
lighting candles.
Right, not a good time to light a candle.
Even vanilla ones.
Right, not a good time to decide. You know, maybe this marijuana is a good idea to pick this up right now. Mm. Not a good idea.
This would be the time for edibles.
Thank you, Judy.
Well, don't cook the edibles, though.
Go ahead and isolate that soundbite, Brian. Broken habit for the rest of the forever.
Judy does have advice for those in Boston right now whose houses might be exploding due to a gas leak is stay away from the flammable marijuana and go immediately to the edibles.
If there was ever a time for edibles, I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's my job to give out sane advice. Okay?
All right. I don't even know. What would you like? What would you like to tell us is coming up in the WGN newsroom?
Take your pick.
Mm-hmm. Violetta?
Coach Fitz joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning, 7:10, talking about this weekend's matchup. Northwestern takes on Akron.
Go Cats.
The Zips.
The Akron, Zips. That's right.
Go Cats.
Worst name in all of organized sports.
Awful. Zipper warehouse capital of the world, Akron.
Oh, is that the connectivity there?
Hmm. Yes.
Zips. Go Cats.
All right. Brocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
All right, we have a lot of breaking news here, and we're watching it all from the WGN newsroom. Judy's got a full staff in there right now, making sure that we're getting every detail as they become available. We're obviously watching the story of the Cicero police officer who has been shot, and we will find out what is happening there. And the houses that are exploding randomly in the suburbs of Boston. I can't believe I'm saying this. It's like the beginning of a crazy disaster movie, mm-hmm. Richard Roper.
It really is. Yeah.
And then you got this hurricane that's approaching. There's also pulses from outer space that the people at SETI. This is true. This mm-hmm. happened this week.
Yeah.
That the people at SETI are like, we don't really know what
that
is. We don't exactly know what it is.
Hmm.
But there are a couple different theories on it.
It's the Predator.
And did you see this? This in Albuquerque, New Mexico, this big, the sort of, you know, one of those extraterrestrial military sites has been been closed down, and the FBI has locked it down is now there. Apparently one of the aliens got away, something like that.
Better Call Saul. It works around there.
And these are all real stories. I'm not making any of these
madness
up.
Really on Thursday. Is.
That's the crazy piece. All right, well, now let's go to the stuff that's been made up. What do we have that's opening this weekend in the movie theaters?
Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I want to talk a little bit about Slice, which is a movie that people have been asking about for a couple of years, because about 2 years ago, Chance the Rapper was tweeting out pictures of him on a motorbike saying, hey, coming soon, a little scooter. Slice. Movie finally came out. It was filmed in Joliet, beautiful Joliet, Illinois, in 2016. It's coming out now. It's already available on streaming video. And it's a deliberately campy, schlocky, drive-in B-movie in which Chance the Rapper, billed as Chance Bennett in this film because he's making that transition or maybe wants to do some more acting. He plays the scooter-riding former delivery person for a Chinese restaurant who also becomes a werewolf once a month. And in the meantime,
Full moon werewolf.
Right. The town also has a population of about 90,000 humans and 40,000 ghosts who kind of coexists. Right. And there are some witches
Juliet
involved.
Juliet does have that.
And there's some witches involved. And now there's a string of murders of pizza delivery people.
Oh, no.
And people think that Chance the Werewolf might be responsible for it. And it's actually a lot of fun. I'm giving it 3 stars.
What?
And I'll tell you why. Because this movie knows what it wants to be. It has the look of a movie you would see at a drive-in if drive-in theaters were still out there. The first movie you'd see before you get the better one, like Halloween or something like that. And in addition to Chance, who's you know very nice and you know likable, natural presence on screen, it's actually got a really interesting cast. Zazie Beetz, who's in Atlanta, the TV show, which is in Deadpool 2. Hannibal Buress, who plays a character named Hannibal. So he's, you know, basically just there as Hannibal Buress.
Yeah.
Joe Keery, who's on Stranger Things. He's the kid with the crazy hair, with the, you know, all the big hair. Chris Parnell, who's been around forever. All these really talented supporting players are in this. Hmm. I don't know if they all did it because they wanted to hang out with Chance and get tickets to the next show. Or the number 3 hats at, you know, for swag, because it's a decidedly low budget movie. But every time someone walks on, you know, into a scene, you're like, I know who that is.
Wait a minute.
So it's a lot of fun. Slice, and it's very bloody, but it's like the kind of, you know, where the murder, when the pizza people get literally like sliced up, you can almost see like the special effects person putting the squibs of blood there just right before it, which is kind of fun, you know.
All right.
So there you go.
You like it.
Is it newcomers making it? Like, or...
Yeah, it's a young filmmaker who's the writer and the director who I think went to school with Chance.
Oh,
he's very
okay.
talented as well. So they did a really nice job. And it was kind of cool, too. I'm sorry, his name is Austin Vesely. I wanted to give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a big premiere at the Arclight Theater Monday night in Chicago. And then, you know, and Chance was nice enough to kind of show up knowing that that would then get the TV trucks from every single station in town to come to the red carpet. And then the whole cast came out for the Q&A, which, again, was really cool of him to not just say, hey, this is all about me, you know, and wanted to kind of give all these other, some of these young actors, a couple stage actors from Chicago who got some nice roles in this as well. So it's pretty neat.
All right. Go see Slice.
All right, slice it up.
Okay. Mm. All right. A simple favor?
Simple favor. Okay. Paul Feig, who created one of the co-creators of Freaks and Geeks, and he did Bridesmaids and Melissa McCarthy's film Spy, done a lot of great comedies. This is actually, it's a dark comedy, but it's an R-rated thriller as well. Consider if they did The Girl on the Train, but they had a sense of humor about it, which they should have had. So the deal here is Anna Kendrick is perfectly cast as a very intense single mom, mommy blogger. And Blake Lively is perfectly cast as a new mom in town who looks and acts like a movie star. So, of course, Anna Kendrick's character kind of gets a mom crush on the Blake Lively character. And Henry Golding, who was just in Crazy Rich Asians, is Blake Lively's husband. And all of a sudden, the Blake Lively character goes missing. And now the question is, did she get murdered? Is there some sort of double, triple cross at play? And off we go. It kind of reminded me of, remember, To Die For with Nicole Kidman 20 years ago, where she kind of manipulates everybody, even a little bit of body heat, but done in a more comedic way. And Blake Lively's perfectly cast to play someone who's just, you know, she works for a fashion icon. She is a fashion icon. She swears in front of her kid. She's completely inappropriate. You know she's trouble. She tells everybody she's trouble, but you can't resist her because she's Blake Lively.
Right.
3.5 stars for A Simple Favor. You really kind of got to go with this one. It's rated R. There's some language in here that's absolutely hilarious that I can't repeat at all right now. And the cast is great. Everybody's perfectly cast in this. I really love the banter between Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively in particular.
Two of my favorites, by the way.
Yeah, it's just really fun.
Very excited about this one.
And then they're bringing the Predator back. There's more Predator.
The Predator, you know, 1987, the original, of course, yeah. famous for Get to the Choppa, which was, you know, a lot of fun. As a, again, a kind of a B movie. Now they're doing The Predator, which does reference the events of the films from the 80s and 90s. I wasn't a huge fan of this. It's a two-star movie. It's very gory, and it's what it wants to be, but it has a lot of humor and a lot of stuff in it that feels like it's from a 1980s movie.
Has Sterling K. Brown in it.
Sterling K. Brown. It's Olivia Munn, who's terrific.
Yeah, we love her.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Jane, who's done a lot of good stuff. Trevante Rhodes, who was in Moonlight a couple of years ago. So you've got a really good cast, and it's got that, again, kind of a, it's more of a big budget than Slice, of course, but you know, so it's got, and it's got the Predator, but it's just like, I'm so tired of these movies where the, you know, right at the beginning they get the Predator and they strap him down and the scientists all walk around and go, oh, don't worry, he's sedated, and you're like, yeah, what? He's gonna wake up and be mad.
You just know,
come on. Or they shoot their guns at him. First they shoot him with the big automatic weapons, then they pull out the handgun, and then they throw the gun at the Predator, and I'm like, that doesn't work. So a little frustrating, and yeah. some really kind of, you know, questionable humor, you know, making fun of somebody with Tourette's and a few things like that that feel kind of like they were written in 1987. So 2 stars
or in 2018.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let's take a little time out here. I want to find out from Judy what's happening in the newsroom.
I'm almost afraid to ask Judy.
House of Cards creator has a new series.
Yes. Can't wait to tell you guys about this. Yeah.
So we'll find out about that. But first, Judy, what is happening in the newsroom? Judy, so
hold on. I've got it.
So much going on in the newsroom. Judy's not sure what to say.
A Cicero cop shot, gas explosions near Boston, and Hurricane Florence bearing down on the East Coast.
Make Sunday is your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV.
I like Rule 1.5. I prefer Rule 1.6.
Ah.
What's that?
Quite honestly.
Wow.
I can't tell you.
Oh.
All right. Let's. Richard Roper is here. Let's talk about the first. This is a Hulu limited series brought to us by the people who brought us House of Cards, which is pretty incredible. And Sean Penn's in it.
Yeah. I thought of you two in particular when I saw this. So we got to talk about this on the show. So Bo Willimon, who created House of Cards, has created this 8-episode limit. I love these limited series. Mm-hmm. Aren't they? I mean, when they're done well, like Sharp Objects and things like that.
They leave you wanting more.
Yeah, but the nice thing is, you know, a lot of cases, sometimes they'll go back with the second, you know, season, but it's kind of neat because you get your closure a little faster. You know, you got 2 months if they're going to show every week. So this is going to be on Hulu, and it's set in the early 2030s, around the year 2033. So it's just in the near future, and it's really cool how they have it be in the future without beating you over the head with it. You know, the self-driving cars are just a reality now and things like that. And it's all about the first manned mission to Mars in this world, which I also like. It's not one of these dystopian futures. It actually seems to be like, you know, it's a complicated world, but we've gone through the other side of the stuff we're going through now. And a giant private aerospace company is working with NASA and wants to send people to Mars, and the technology exists. And in fact, Sean Penn's character, he plays a veteran, a former military hero and then astronaut who is described when he does TV interviews as the 13th man to walk on the moon. So we know, like, in the past he walked on the moon, which is kind of cool. But this is now all about him gathering his team of about 5 or 6 astronauts, scientists, explorers, obviously, who are going to go to Mars. And that's going to be a 2.5-year round trip mission. So it's a lot of it is about the preparations for that. And you get to meet all the teammates, but primarily it's Sean Penn's character's story. And he was this great astronaut. His wife died. His daughter became addicted to drugs. So he had to drop out of the space program. Now he's back. And he's a legend, but he's got a lot of problems he's dealing with. And it's beautifully done, first of all. You watch some of this stuff and you just go, that looks like a giant ship is going through our skies to Mars. It, you know, like in the movies, not just like TV stuff. And it's got a lot of beautiful stuff like that, but then a lot of good character stuff. So I'm giving the series 3.5 stars, guys.
Wow.
It's called The First.
Have you gone all the way through it? Do you know the ending?
Oh, let me just tell you something. But yeah, I don't want to say anything because actually,
writing the review was very problematic because, yes, and actually something happens in the first episode that I just didn't want to get into, but it was hard to describe the rest of the series without describing what happens in the first episode. Let's just say that. Yeah, I mean, it was really hard to say.
It sells it pretty well for me.
Yeah.
It does. Now I'm hooked. I want to see it.
And, you know, Sean Penn, we haven't seen a lot of him lately. He's done like 5 movies in the last 10 years because, you know, he's in Haiti all the time. He's doing different things. He's directing. So to see him acting again, and he's the centerpiece of this show, is to remind us why he's a 2-time Academy Award winner, why he's one of the best actors around, because he's great in this. He's great in it. And he's never done a television show before. Other than, like, you know, yeah, he did fun guest things. And, you know, his dad was a TV director, so I think he might have been on Mannix as a kid or something,
right?
You know, kid number 3.
Right.
But he's just so great. The first or second scene in the entire series, he's got a dog that he goes running with, just a faithful companion. And I swear, like, when he brings the dog, I'm like, he makes the dog a better actor. Just him talking to the dog, if you do better, you'd say, that has to be Sean Penn's dog. How does that dog love him so much? He's Sean Penn! He'd be the first to tell you. He's not always lovable.
Uh-huh. No.
But he does that with the other actors in the show as well. So it kind of came out of the blue. I hadn't heard a ton about it, but obviously huge credentials. The House of Cards creator. Also, there's politics here because, of course, there's lobbying Congress and there's senators who are going to vote against, you know, moving forward with this. But maybe they'll get this kind of money for their own thing and all that kind of, you know, you get a lot of those machinations as well.
Yeah.
But I find the most fascinating stuff is the space stuff, right. You know.
Wow. So you're on Earth for part of the time, but you're in the spaceship for
a big portion.
What's it
maybe. The no? first, because it's going to be about the first person to walk on Mars. And
wow.
You know, as I said, the technology is really cool too, because you're like, okay, this for once not set in a future where everybody wears gray and all the doors slide like they did on Star Trek, and there's always some big voice saying everyone must go home now. It's kind of a cool future, but you know, it's like everything's working well, which we like. You know, I like it because for the first time you see Sean Penn in the back seat of a car, you're like, why would he have a driver? He's like his own kind of, because it's a pickup truck, and you're like, oh, because it drives itself.
Spoiler alert.
That's going to happen?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's, and the House of Cards, as, you know, such a character-driven show, yeah, was so beautifully shot.
Right? Everyone was like, and here we have it, you know, just, I think by coincidence, you have Robin Wright, who was once married to Sean Penn, you know, in House of Cards, and now Sean Penn in the first.
It seems like Ari Emanuel had something to do with all of this. Doesn't it seem like they, like the super agents
together?
They
yeah.
have them all. They probably got Sean and Robin together at some point. Then it's like, but he still had them, because even though they separated, that's what happens in Hollywood though, is when couples get together.
Uh-huh.
They generally get together because they met through their agent. And then, honey, baby, darling, sweetheart, listen, you two, they meet at a party, at an agency party or something.
True.
And then they divorce each other, but they do not divorce the agent.
That's true. And neither one of them is going to give up custody of Ari.
No.
Yeah. That's something there. Anyway, that's something. That House of Cards was a great, great, great series. And now the first, you say,
check
3.5 stars.
Yeah, check it
out. All right.
Thank you.
All right, let's check in now. We've got Judy Pilak standing by with the WGN News from the, don't tell me, Northwestern Medicine WGN Newsroom, and will we go straight to Judy now? All right, we're being good because there's a lot going on. Judy's news being brought to you by HearingHealthCenter.com.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duffy. And in the studio with us right now, he's one of our favorites.
Yes.
He is Izzy Adonijé. Every Chicago Bear should look to Izzy Adonijé and say, this is the guy I want to be when I grow up.
Yes, that's my model for the future.
Yeah.
Even if you're not a Chicago Bear, you might want to say that.
That's true.
Don't you
think? I say that.
I say it too.
I say that to people.
When I grow up, I want to be Izzy Adonijé.
I'm trying to be like you guys when I grow up.
Yeah, okay.
This office I'm in right now, if you guys could see it, it is outstanding.
We do have a nice office. Views of Navy Pier, the river, the architecture of Chicago. Very lucky.
My office is in a basement.
Yes, I know. Okay, we're not going to complain about your office because you're making things happen in that office that are pretty incredible.
Making magic.
All right, now let's just talk a little bit before we get to News or Ruse here. Let's just talk a little bit about what Izzy's been up to. First of all, I gotta I gotta say, and we're gonna play. You got a big party coming up in November. We'll get to that in just a moment. But Izzy came up with this idea. Have you seen the Bears marketing where they got the Bears superheroes, where the players now are look like Marvel trademark comic book characters, right? Yeah. That are just like popping out of whether it at bus stands downtown, wherever you're seeing these billboards, you're seeing these characters, and this came from you.
Yeah, it's truly been one, I think, very special to be able to plug back in and be at Hallis Hall so much and connecting with the team in a different way. It's been really special doing that and just seeing the vision come to life. We first talked about it 2010. I had a bunch of players drawn up at the time. It was like Brian, Jay, and Julius. Mm-hmm. And we mocked up a bunch of covers and they loved it. And timing is so important in everything in life.
And let's just face it. I mean, here is, one of the more imposing Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears is a very large successful man, great looking, glint in his eye. Yeah. When he smiles, there's actually a sparkle in his teeth. I've never seen anything like this.
Smile when but you see Izzy.
It turns out you're a geek. You're a geek at heart, right? I mean, you're like this comic book geek.
Your brain is always firing. Comics.
Yeah, I do love just being creative. And even beyond sport, I've always considered myself a creator. Mm-hmm. And I grew up reading comics, I grew up drawing, playing guitar, and just always all things creative. So this was 2007 actually. In training camp, I created a comic called The Protectors, where athletes, their ability in sport was a byproduct of the greater gift that they had. Mm-hmm. And they had to make a choice, am I just going to be an athlete or serve my true purpose?
I think Marvel actually stole that from you with the Defenders, if I am not mistaken.
True.
Sort of a deal.
But your vision became reality.
Yeah,
now
in reality, it's been so fun. The players that have been like, hey,
they like
hitting
it?
Me up like, hey, can I get a character done?
Yeah.
Well, you got to make some more plays on Sunday, bro.
Are you drawing all these, or is somebody else?
I don't draw them. I can draw, but not even near on the level of Andy Smith, who's the artist that does all
doing
the work.
It.
He's
all
a
right.
part of our team, and we've brought on just world class artists that have worked at some of the top shops.
Super cool stuff.
They are.
And then Izzy's birthday, I mean, I already know this, is November 17th.
That's it.
Because, it's the most, we stop down on November 17th. And mm-hmm. just we have to make sure that this is a very well-respected day. And you've got your annual charity event coming up that day.
Yeah.
It's for
If Charities.
Ifcharities.org.
That's it.
And where are you doing that?
Yeah, so we're going to be doing it at the venue's 19 East in the South Loop. We're honoring our community leader this year is going to be a dear friend and a mentor of mine, Chris Gardner. If you remember the movie,
sure.
The Pursuit of Happiness,
yeah.
was about this guy. He's just an incredible person. And actually, interesting. Will Smith played him.
So let's just start with that.
Yeah, exactly. An epic movie. And, I lived in the same building with Mr. Gardner when I moved to Chicago from the suburbs, 06. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being in the lobby, and he's like, hey, young man, what are you doing right now? I'm like, oh, nothing, just going back, to my house. He's like, well, drop your stuff off and let's grab dinner. And every week after that, he and I grabbed dinner, and, he just kind of mentored me as a successful business guy in this city. So I'm really looking forward to celebrating all the work he's done that people know about, and then he's done a lot of stuff just to give in Chicago.
He flies a little under the radar because he is here all the time, and he's doing great work, but he's not the guy who's in front of the microphone all the time. And
yeah,
it's that story you tell is one I've heard from others before.
Yeah, super low key, and he's just about, his story of being homeless and everything that he came out of. He's just trying to,
And Will Smith played him. And you should see that movie. You should see that movie.
If
you've not seen that movie, it is really amazing.
Speak too. Yes.
Oh, phenomenal speaker.
All right, we're going to play some News or Ruse here. And let us start here with, let you guys pick them up for me. You got Randall with Judy. You got Debbie playing with Violetta. And George playing with Izzy.
I hope
you people are all ready to go
how
here.
Are you?
Good, buddy.
All right, Randall, you there?
Hey, Judy.
Hey, right. Randall, ready to win?
Grand prize winner gets a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 15th. That's this Saturday, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. The first 10,000 fans inside the building get an Alistair Brinkat bobblehead. Get tickets to ChicagoBlackhawks.com. And a never measure. I have one of these. This is the best thing I ever had. Easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. The paintings, whatever you got, pictures. Eliminate the need to use measuring tape and calculate fractions. That's why I have it. Veteran owned and made in the USA. Get yours at nevermeasure.com. And then everybody gets a pair of tickets to Avenue Q. The Mercury Theater, Chicago, Modern Laugh Out Loud, Puppet comedy, musical following a group of 20-somethings and making their way to the big city. For tickets, call 773-325-1700 or mercurytheaterchicago.com. Wow. That's, all right. Everybody's got
everybody
something.
Everybody wins.
All right.
No,
here we
just
go.
One person wins.
Randall and Judy, here is your headline. Kentucky man faked a heart attack to get an ambulance ride to the hospital cafeteria.
Were the foods delicious?
That sounds real to me down in Kentucky.
Doesn't it? Let's go with news.
My mom did this once, too. All
did
right,
she
here we go.
She?
Debbie and Violetta. Oh,
Debbie, Violetta, you ready for your headline?
Yeah.
Dumpster pool craze leads to construction delays in downtown Cleveland.
What do you think, Deb?
Can you repeat it again?
Dumpster pool, in quotes, craze leads to construction delays in downtown Cleveland.
Oh.
I don't know if construction is even happening.
I need an answer here. We're short on time. News or ruse?
Okay. What do you think?
News. Let's go.
All right. Okay.
George, let's go, bro.
George and Izzy, okay. Here's your headline. Thousands of tents abandoned in fields because festival goers think they will go to charity.
What you thinking?
I'm thinking news.
Let's do it.
Got it. Well done, gentlemen.
All right, round two, Randall and Judy.
Randall, Judy, school resource officers caught illegally selling soda to students. The soda. Little side business.
Mm-hmm. Hey, because you can't get. You
can't get it.
Pepsi.
And
I'd say Coke in high school, but you can get that. You can't get the Coca-Cola. Yes, go ahead.
What do you think, Randall?
Judy, I still think that's news, too.
All right, news.
There you go.
All right.
Debbie and Violetta, you got to get this right to stay in it. Putin's bodyguard challenged to Minecraft duel and pillow fight in viral defense of critic.
Ooh. Okay. What does the other person think?
Well, I don't know much. So what do you think?
What does the other person think? We don't even refer to Violetta by name anymore. What does the other person
think?
We
should try that. We should always try that.
News?
Can you go with news?
You would? Okay.
She's right.
She's got it. Wow. Way to trust your instincts, Debbie.
All right.
The other person. Not the other person.
George and Izzy.
Let's go, George.
Okay.
Hong Kong woman marries stranger after being tricked by work.
General.
Very general. Read into it what you like.
I know. I'm thinking ruse. But what's your gut telling you?
Let's go ruse.
Very close, right there. It was a mock wedding. They were going to do a mock wedding at work, and it turns out she really married the guy. Hey, wait a second!
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that happened to me once too.
Yeah.
All right, hold on. Don't anybody move. We'll be right back to News or Ruse, where Judy finally has a commanding lead. But first, let's check in with Judy and find out what's coming up in the newsroom at the top of the hour.
A Cicero police officer shot on Chicago's South Side. Well, actually in Cicero.
All right. The traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Tune in tomorrow morning to the Steve Cochran Show, 7:50. Governor Rauner will join him, talk about the speech he had today and his repositioning.
All right, News or Ruse continues right here. Izzy Adonijé is with us. By the way, Izzy is celebrating a number of milestones in his life. But he's got a fundraiser coming up November 17th, which is his birthday. And it's ifcharities.org, right? Is if people want to take part in that, mm-hmm. they want to check out what's happening
Great
there.
Great organization.
And you just get to meet Izzy. Meeting Izzy changes your life, actually.
It does.
In so many ways. So thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's see. Right now, this is important because Debbie and Violetta and George and Izzy only have one right. Judy has two right with her partner, Randall. And so these guys got to get it right just to stay in it. Let's start with Debbie and Violetta. And this is the Orion Samuelson round. Here is your headline.
Serena Williams reportedly crushed beer pong at the royal wedding like it was tennis.
No.
I can't believe you made Orion read that.
That's news.
Yes.
That
well
is correct.
Done, Debbie.
That is news.
Wow.
That is news.
Don't mess with our royal information.
Yeah, I'll bet you. Well, you know, athletes, right? I mean, you know, hand-eye coordination. Serena Williams is, you know, in the top 1/1,000,000%
absolutely
of eye-hand coordination.
What can she
right
do?
So she can be pretty good at beer pong. Yeah. She understands angles, too. That's a really important thing. All right. Let's now to our George and Izzy. You got to get this right to stay in it.
All right, Izzy.
Let's go.
Florida man climbs on playground equipment to tell children where babies come from.
Oh, God.
What?
Oh, God.
Oh, gee.
I hope that's not true.
Do you have a visual in your mind right now, Ro?
I do. Oh,
try
no
to get it out.
George.
I think I heard this was news.
Okay, let's do it. News.
That is
nice
correct.
Yes.
All right.
Randall,
let's go, George.
Randall,
all right.
We're going to get him with OB. We're going to get him on that OB, that Ed O'Branovich show. I think that would be good. Oh, my God. Can you imagine, Izzy? I don't even want to talk about what happened on Sunday. Let's not talk about it, Izzy. All right, here we go. This is for the win, Randall and Judy.
UK airport sniffer dogs are good at finding sausages, but not drugs.
You gotta eat. Dogs gotta eat.
Judy?
It sounds like news, right?
It does to me too. I think we should go that direction.
All right, because you're gonna win even.
Izzy's
anyway
saying no, but Izzy's your competitor. You're saying yes, and that's it.
Congratulations. Nice job, Randall.
Nicely played.
Yeah.
Judy, thank you, sweetie.
You bet.
Yeah. All right, you two. All right, hold on one second here, because let's just face it. You didn't want to see Judy try to kneecap Izzy Adonijay. That would not have been good.
Really could have gotten ugly.
Enthusiasm scared me a little bit.
Enthusiastic, man. All right. And again, repeating now, the grand prize winner gets a pair of tickets to Blackhawks Training Camp Festival. That is happening on Saturday, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. First 10,000 fans inside the building get an Alex DeBrincat bobblehead. ChicagoBlackhawks.com for all details on that. And a Never Measure, NeverMeasure.com. You want to hang stuff on your wall. It takes all the guesswork out of that. And the runners-up get a pair of tickets to Avenue Q, now playing at Mercury Theater, Chicago, the modern laugh-out-loud puppet comedy musical following a group of 20-somethings making their way through the big city. Tickets at 773-325-1700 or MercuryTheaterChicago.com. And Izzy is a busy, busy, busy man. Izzy.
Busy Izzy, I like that.
And again, congratulations on this Monsters of the Midway campaign for the Bears. It is so cool. If you have not seen these, basically they've turned Bears players into superheroes.
And they look awesome.
Right. And you see the advertising on billboards and downtown here on bus, you know, on these bus stations. Yeah. It's amazing.
And actually there will be in every 7-Eleven, you can get the Monsters 7-Eleven drink cups.
Oh, wow.
Set of seven and collect all seven cups. And it has our sports heroes, our players on it. So.
And what are the players' reaction? What did they tell you? They're like,
oh, man, guys were like, that is what my abs look like.
Yes.
You know, my arms do look like that.
And for Khalil Mack, they just have him. They just take a picture of him.
Right.
And they don't have to draw anything.
No editing, nothing.
You just put a cape on him, and there you go, right?
When the Bears got Khalil Mack, what were you? Obviously, now, you know, you have played this game at a very, very high level. Mm-hmm. What was your take on that?
What a great move. You know, really at the 11th hour of the season.
Yeah.
You know, beginning of the season. So you saw the energy and just the level of intensity that it brought to the season that we're about to have. And then I truly felt, and I know some people felt we gave up too much, but to get a guy of that caliber that brings so much, who's never been injured, you know.
First day on the job. Pretty good first day on the job. We'll see what he does on Monday night. Izzy, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Izzy.
Thank you, guys.
We're going to check in with Andrea, and we're going to check in, of course, with Patty coming up right after.